This is Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kevin Harris. Now stay close. At the end of today's podcast, I'll tell you about some of the amazing topics we're going to be talking about with Dr. Craig in the coming days. Believe me when I tell you, there are some interesting things that we cover from all over the world, and you don't want to miss a minute of it. In the meantime, Dr. Craig, you've been busy as usual. Fill us in on some of the things you've been up to. You've been spending some time out on the west coast of the States.
Yes, that's right. I've been out at Talbot. I was there for 2 weeks teaching a course in philosophy of religion at Talbot School of Theology. Had a great group of students. And then a week after that, I was back out at Biola once more for a dialogue on religion and science that featured my colleague J.P. Moreland as well as John Lennox, who is really a remarkable man. I got to know him a little bit better during this forum. So those were a couple of recent events that I've been involved in. And then in early February, I was at Rutgers University, where Ratio Christi sponsored a campus-wide event where I spoke on the existence of God and the beginning of the universe. And we had a large capacity crowd for that, and about an hour and a half of questions after the lecture that I did. That was very, very fun. And then the next day, I spent an hour and a half with the Ratio Christi chapter answering questions that they peppered me with. And this group includes quite a number of unbelievers as well as Christians. And we had a very good time of interaction. These folks are very congenial. They're not hostile or rude, just genuine, sincere questions that we explored together. And then we hurried from that informal time to a reading group that's run by Dean Zimmerman at Rutgers. He is in the Faculty of Philosophy there, and one of, I think, America's foremost metaphysicians. And they had read my paper on anti-Platonism, which is part of the Six Views book, Beyond the Control of God, edited by Paul Gould. And I walked into the room, and there I saw not only Dean Zimmerman, but Bob and Marilyn Adams sitting there, very prominent Christian philosophers. In the corner was Rob Koons from UT Austin, who is there on sabbatical. And then in the other side of the room, Howard Robinson from Central European University in Budapest, as well as quite a number of graduate students. And for the next 2 hours then, we had a discussion of this paper, and it was really a wonderful experience to have this interaction by peers on my work. And it was an encouragement to me, Kevin, that I'm going in the right direction and that my thinking on this is solid and defensible. So that was a really good time. And then when that reading group finished, we hurried down the hall to Marilyn Adams' seminar in philosophy of religion. She is doing a course on the incarnation. And as part of that, they read my chapter from Philosophical Foundations for a Christian Worldview, in which I propose and defend a neo-Apollinarian Christology. And for the next 2.5 hours then, until I had to go to the airport, we dialogued and discussed this proposed Christology. And that was very interesting as well, and helpful to me as well, to see their insights and feedback on this model. So that was a really great trip. So those are some of the things that I've been up to lately.
You had a chance to speak at a church as well out there.
I'm sorry, I overlooked that. That's right. When I was at Talbot, I went up to Ventura, California, which is up north, close to Santa Barbara, and spoke in Ventura Baptist Church. And they did a very novel thing. They had set aside their Sunday morning services and turned them over to evangelistic outreaches geared toward non-believers, that you could bring your non-believing friend. And during the first hour, I spoke on the question, does God exist? And we used the three Zangmeister videos that we've developed on the Kalam cosmological argument, the fine-tuning argument, and the moral argument. I would show the video clip, and then I would reflect on it and discuss it a little bit, and then we threw it open to the floor for questions. And then in the second hour, we talked about the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus. Has God revealed himself in history in some way that we can know him in a more particular way? And I argued for the historicity of Jesus' resurrection. And so this was really a great way to use a Sunday morning to reach out to the community. And they about doubled their attendance from what they normally get during those two services. So they were really excited about this outreach as well.
Churches, take note. What a great way to spend a Sunday morning, as you said, to do something like this. Fantastic. That's good material too, Bill. Three reasons God exists and three reasons it makes a difference.
That was the name of the talk, right?
We can defend God's existence and talk about His existence, and then somebody say, okay, God exists, so what?
So what, yes.
So three reasons that it makes a difference.
Right. I led off with the three reasons that it makes a big difference if God exists, and therefore you ought to think about it. And the first reason was that if God does not exist, then life is ultimately meaningless. We're all just doomed to perish in the heat death of the universe, no matter what we do or what we think. It all ends up the same. The second reason was that if God does not exist, then there's no hope of deliverance from the shortcomings of our finite existence. And I'm thinking here of things like evil in the world, to which there's no solution if there's no God. The world is just filled with gratuitous and unredeemed suffering. And then I'm thinking too of course, aging, disease, and finally death. There's no hope of deliverance from those on atheism. And then finally, the third reason was a positive reason. If God does exist, then not only is there a basis for meaning and hope, but it also provides the possibility of coming to know God and His love in a personal way. And this could be a life-changing experience. And therefore, it's very important to ask the question, is there really a God?
Bill, talk about the event at Baylor University as well. That wasn't too long ago.
No, that's right. That was last November. This was a really interesting conference, Kevin. Years ago, back in 1982, I think, Alvin Plantinga was invited to give a lecture at Wheaton College at the philosophy conference. As a young philosopher and faculty member at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, which is just north of Chicago and northeast of Wheaton, I attended this conference. And the lecture that Plantinga gave was called Two Dozen or So Arguments for God's Existence. And Kevin, it was just a tour de force. He laid out more than two dozen arguments for God's existence, many of which were so creative and novel and unusual that they'd just never been discussed before. Well, now, years later, the philosophers at Baylor University decided to have a conference where they would revisit these two dozen or so arguments. They would invite Plantinga to come to the conference, and they would assign to a Christian philosopher each one of these arguments. And then he would give a paper on it, and these would eventually be published in the form of a book on these two dozen or so arguments for God's existence. And so the conference was a sort of working conference where certain selected participants would present the rough draft of their chapter or their paper and get feedback from the other people in the audience. And so I was invited to give a paper on the Kalam cosmological argument. This was not, interestingly enough, one of the two dozen listed by Plantinga back in 1982, but he had a section of the paper called And So On. And so the Kalam argument got thrown into the batch of And So On arguments.
I wonder why.
Well,
why wouldn't that be cosmological arguments, and that family of arguments are among the more prominent?
Well, I would like to think that since I presented or wrote the Kalam cosmological argument only in 1979, that it was still very new in terms of people's consciousness. But I also think that Plantinga, when you look at the body of his work, really never interacts with the argument. Even subsequently, he never endorses it and never disputes it. The only place I found in his corpus where he interacts with the argument is a brief passage in his book, Warranted Christian Belief, where he criticizes Kant's argument in his first antinomy for the thesis that the world had a beginning. Mm-hmm. And that was part of my talk that I gave at Baylor. I looked at Kant's argument, quoted it verbatim, then looked at the relevant paragraphs from planning his argument, and showed how planning, I think, just had failed to connect with Kant's argument, that he really didn't represent it accurately, and that his criticism was therefore quite off target. So that was part of the paper that I presented and will eventually be developed into this chapter. And again, it was really fun to interact with the other philosophers. The first one to ask me a question, as I recall, was Richard Swinburne.
Right. I mean, I would have loved to have been at this conference, but I saw a picture of Richard Swinburne asking you a question. I said, I'd like to be a fly on the wall.
Oh, that was fun.
What did he ask?
I think it had to do with whether or not, if the universe had a beginning, there was time before the universe. Because his view is that there is a kind of non-metric time prior to the beginning of the universe in which intervals of time cannot be compared. It makes no sense to say there was a period 1 trillion years prior to the beginning of the universe or 1 second prior to the beginning of the universe. In this non-metric time, it doesn't make sense to compare the length of intervals that are not nested within each other. So I just interacted a little bit with that question and explained that the Kalam argument is itself neutral with respect to whether non-metric time existed prior to the beginning of the universe. The Kalam argument would be that there cannot have been metric time infinite in the past.
Is non-metric time another way to refer to as undifferentiated time?
Yes, that's right. The easy way to think about it is just it's a time which is impossible to measure in terms of its duration or the lengths of any intervals that you might make in it. As I say, there's just no difference between 1 second prior to creation and 10 trillion years prior to creation, because you can't measure intervals, according to Swinburne.
Do you feel like you got young Swinburne straightened out?
He's not the sort of fellow who changes his mind. But I think that my response was adequate.
Still very influential.
And very active, Kevin. You know, this Baylor conference was honoring Alvin Plantinga, who was also in attendance there. But then also, I believe in November, or at least sometime in the fall, there was a conference at Purdue University honoring Richard Swinburne's contributions to philosophy of religion. And this also featured some of the top philosophers in philosophy of religion today, and again, showcased Swinburne's contribution. I would say that while Plantinga is better known and more influential in North America, that in Europe, and I'm particularly thinking of continental Europe, Richard Swinburne would actually be the more influential of the two.
You had a deadline that you had to meet as well, an essay on a Molinist perspective of the problem of evil, and that's coming up in a forthcoming book?
Right. Chad Meister is editing a Four Views book on different approaches to the problem of evil. And he asked me to make a contribution from the Molinist perspective. That is to say, if God has middle knowledge, knowledge of what any person he might create would do in any possible set of circumstances he might place him in, if God has that kind of knowledge, does that help in dealing with the problem of evil in the world? And I argued that it helps a great deal because it shows very clearly how God could have good reasons for allowing the suffering in the world that would not at all be perspicuous to us. These instances of evil or suffering might appear to us utterly pointless and unnecessary and gratuitous, but for a God with middle knowledge who understands the incomprehensible complexity of providentially ordering a world of free creatures to ultimately achieve his ends, there might be reasons for this suffering that God has, even though they're not obvious to us.
Houston Baptist University has some things going on as well.
Right.
They keep you busy.
Right. I was there in the fall and had a wonderful experience at that time. And now Jan and I will be back again at HBU for a week, where I'll be teaching on the Kalam cosmological argument. And we'll also be meeting with President Sloan and his wife and getting to know some of the members of the board who are having a meeting themselves during that week. So we're looking forward to the time at HBU.
Some television appearances as well in Nashville coming up?
That's right. The National Religious Broadcasters is inviting me to come to Nashville and do a talk on the concept of God and Islam and Christianity. As you know, of course, Islam is so much in the news today. And so they are inviting a number of pretty prominent individuals to come in and address the question of Islam and Christianity from different perspectives. And so as a philosopher and theologian, they've invited me to talk about the differing concepts of God in these two religions.
Hope and pray that this will be some real seed planting at the NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, because the most influential, certainly religious broadcasters and Christian broadcasters, as well as just American broadcasters, are members of the NRB and attend these conferences. And
yes, so this isn't normally something I would do, but precisely for that reason, Kevin, I felt that this was a strategic opportunity to introduce the resources that Reasonable Faith has to these folks and hope that they would then take advantage of them.
What's the rest of the year look like so far? You know, some debates, lectures?
Number of things this year, Kevin. A couple of international trips and some really exciting opportunities coming up. In March, Jan and I will be traveling to England for my Cadbury lectures at the University of Birmingham. This is a very prestigious lecture series that I've been invited to deliver, and it's particularly meaningful to me because the University of Birmingham is my alma mater. This is where I studied the cosmological argument under the direction of John Hick, who was a doctoral advisor than which a greater cannot be conceived. He was just terrific to work with. And so I'm really excited to be giving these lectures. The overall title of the lectures is God Over All. And it is a defense of God's being the sole ultimate reality. There are no uncreated entities apart from God. And so it will be meeting the challenge of Platonism to this Christian claim. And I'll be talking about the Platonist claim that there are uncreated abstract objects like numbers and propositions and possible worlds and properties and things of those sort. And then after the Cadbury lectures are over, I'll be giving a public lecture at the University of Birmingham on the Kalam cosmological argument, which is very appropriate since it was there that I wrote the doctoral dissertation that argument in my work came from.
Any debates scheduled?
I do have a debate in October. This will be our second international trip at the University of Munich, which is again interesting because that's where I did my doctoral studies under Wolfhard Pollenberg in theology on the resurrection of Jesus. And this will be a debate on the existence of God with a German philosopher named Ansgar Beckermann. And in reading his work, I found Beckermann to be very informed about Anglo-American analytic philosophy of religion. He cites Swinburne, cites Plantinga, interacts with their work. And this debate is going to be in German, which makes it a particular challenge. Now, my German isn't good enough to just do this extemporaneously. That would give too much of an advantage away to Herr Beckermann. So what I said I would do is, if we exchange our speeches in advance so that mine can be translated into good, idiomatic, native German, then I'll do it. And so we've already begun an exchange of speeches. We've already exchanged our opening statements. I have then sent to him my first response, and I'm awaiting from him his first response right now as we speak. And I've been practicing my opening speech in German so as to be able to deliver it with the right phrasing and intonation and everything. And this has been a great deal of fun because it's been decades since I have spoken German on a daily basis. And this has really been fun preparing for this. Another event taking place in April will be, I think, of interest to everyone who's part of a Reasonable Faith chapter around the country. We're going to be live streaming an event put on by the Dallas chapter that will take place in a Dallas bar. They've got the permission of the bar to have me give a talk on the existence of God in this saloon, and then it will be live streamed to all of our Reasonable Faith chapters around the country, and folks will be able to ask questions. So this promises to be a really interesting interactive time with a largely non-Christian audience. And then in April, I'm also going to be going over to Southern Evangelical Seminary for a very interesting dialogue with Peter Van Inwagen and J.T. Bridges on the subject of God and abstract objects. And Van Inwagen is one of the world's most prominent metaphysicians. He's also a Platonist. And we see eye to eye on almost nothing. So this should be a really good dialogue, I think, on this very important topic.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Now, here are some topics that we'll be talking about in coming weeks. Recently, Dr. Craig got a very interesting letter, and he included it as a question of the week. Many are saying, including me, that it is one of the most compelling question of the week letters we've ever received at Reasonable Faith. It's titled, "You've Ruined My Life, Professor Craig." You can read the letter and Dr. Craig's response in the question and answer section of reasonablefaith.org, but we want to discuss it further in a podcast, so that's coming up. Also, some more on the pastor who decided to live as an atheist for a year. The story has gone viral, and this former pastor mentions Dr. Craig in a CNN article, so we'll look at that some more. And more on God and science. Now, you may have noticed that there is a sudden increase on the relationship between God and science in the popular press, and there is still so much misunderstanding in this area. Don't miss any Reasonable Faith podcast coming up. And as always, we so appreciate any support you can give us to keep the resources from Dr. Craig free and flowing all over the world. You can donate right there on the website right now at reasonablefaith.org. And we really appreciate it. I'm Kevin Harris, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.